call to order. Let's call to order. Let's see, Ms. Folks, would you do roll call for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis-Wilson? Dr. Davey?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
Dr. Rates?
Present.
You have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Okay, so, you know, thank you to the board staff again for compiling this this agenda for us. But also additionally, I wanted to note the quick turnaround that we're seeing in the applications. On several of these applications, you saw their certification date and then the time the application is being processed by this committee, and it is fast. And so it's just, I want to commend the board staff on that quick turnaround. It's really great and great for the community. So I appreciate that. Let's move on to agenda item number 4, approval of minutes. Do we have a motion to approve or for any of those or all?
So moved.
Okay, do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Next, agenda item number 5, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendation to the board. Agenda item number 5A, Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that. I wanted to make a few comments prior to. So a person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make brief comments to the committee. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. Please use only initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board of attorney. The first complaint for review today is agenda number 6A, complaint 21-17 against Mr. Jeffrey Siegel. Dr. Davey, you're the lead committee member for the complaint. Would you please provide us an overview of the case?
Yeah, if we don't mind, is the individual on the call today? No.
I did not say he's present, Dr. Davey, and I have not heard from him in any capacity.
So, Ms. Michelson, I've got the investigative report. Do you want to walk, would you be willing to just kind of walk us through the highlights of that, and then we can kind of kick us off?
Sure, I can do a brief summary.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on one second, let me pull it up.
Because you know, I mean, just, you know the timeline better than I do. I mean, I can read it verbatim, but you've been living this.
No problem at all. So Mr. Siegel was issued his behavior analyst license in 2014. He has been certified as a BCBA since 2012. Back in March, the board had voted to open a complaint against Mr. Siegel based on the CBA's recommendation, given the concern that he was unresponsive to a former supervisee's multiple attempts, as well as board staff's attempts to obtain the appropriate supervision form from him. It was noted that the individual, as well as Ms. Folks, had made multiple attempts by phone and by email, and to which he did not respond. While this was being reviewed by the CBA, the application, the committee had forwarded it, but also noted that at this time that board staff attempts had gone without response. Her application file did not include any verification form from Mr. Siegel. During this process, we did reach out to an AZ ABA representative to determine if they had any contact information for Mr. Siegel. She must have been successful in those efforts, as we did receive eventually the supervision form from him back in February. In his email, he did not cite any reason for his delay or why he had failed to respond to the applicant or staff previously. It was noted that the address that he had supplied on the supervision form was for a California address. However, he had failed to update his address with the board pursuant to the statutory requirement. After I received the supervision form from Mr. Siegel, I did contact him, ask for him to update his address and to get some clarification as to why he hadn't responded. He ultimately did send me an updated change of address form, which indicated that he had moved to California and was working there. He didn't provide any explanation for why he had not gotten back to Kathy or the applicant previously. I had encouraged him to attend the CBA meeting where they might consider opening a complaint against him. About 15 minutes before that meeting, he did indicate that he would be unable to attend, but didn't provide any additional information. Ultimately, a complaint was opened. He was sent the complaint notification letter to his address in California. I never received any response from him. He was given approximately 1 month to respond. At that point, having received no correspondence from him, I did send him two emails. He did not respond to those. I did attempt to call him at his phone number on record. The call did go through, but I was unable to leave a voice message as it said the mailbox was full. At this point, I did send a subpoena to Mr. Siegel for two things, for him to submit a response to the complaint and also to provide testimony at today's meeting. The tracking information does show that it was delivered to him. I also did email him a copy of the subpoena. I have not heard back from him since that time. So that's my summary of the matter. Thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing the board up to speed on your Herculean efforts to contact this licensee. I just have one other question just for the committee. So when was the last time he renewed his LDA with us?
He renewed last year in May of 2020. So his license is active until May 31st of 2022. It appears that he may have renewed his license before he moved to California, but I do not know for sure.
And then I will just add that we, upon review and preparing for this meeting, we had board staff reach out to the BACB to find out if this individual was supervising RBTs currently, because I think this would this would kind of lead to a pattern perhaps of failure to respond to us or to potential licensees in our state. I really would not want to have other young individuals, young professionals in our field being impacted by this individual's lack of professionalism in response to this board of which we hold jurisdiction for his license in this state. I, for one, having looked at this matter now and having been a part of us seeking information for quite some time, firmly believe that we should go ahead and move this this complaint forward to the full board for action upon ARS 32-2091-12BB, which is failing to furnish information in a timely manner to the board or its investigators or representatives, if requested or subpoenaed, which we have done both, by the board as prescribed in this article. Further, ARS 32-2091-12DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it relates to sections 2.0 and 9.01 of the BACB as ethical code for behavior analysts. And finally, ARS 32-2091-12K, violating any federal or state law that relates to the practice of behavior analysts or to obtain a license to practice behavior analysts as it relates to 32-2066B, and that has to do with change of address. And that is that was Ms. Michelson's summary, and that is my proposal to the committee.
Dr. Davey, could you repeat the ethical provisions?
Yes, so 12BB, 12DD, and 12K.
And the DD relates to which ethical provisions?
2.0 in the BACB ethics code. And 9.01.
And Ms. Michelson, for the record, by which date was he required to comply with the subpoena?
So let's see. So the date that he was required to submit a response for the subpoena was May 20th.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, in terms of the violations, the 12K violating any federal or state law, it's as it relates to the change of address requirement.
Mr. Chair, I would guess if we had any other discussion, this might be a good time.
I
just want to cut to the point, cut to the chase. Like, board staff has already spent an enormous amount of time on this. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't mean to be so cavalier about it, but this needs to go forward and there needs to be some action with the ACB.
Agreed. So in order of procedure, first, thank you both, Ms. Michelson and Dr. Davey, for the review. And is there any further comment at this point? Do we want to, I guess we need to have a point to deliberate. Does anybody have anything to add to Dr. Davey's comment?
My only question is, when can we contact the BACB? I am concerned about these other RBTs. Do we have to wait for the full board to act upon this, or do we have enough concern now from the committee to be able to reach out to the BACB and say there's a problem here?
I would prefer that we wait till the board renders a decision.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so hearing that there's no further deliberation, Dr. Davey, I believe there's a motion in there, but Ms. Galvin, are we okay to move forward with Dr. Davey's comments as a motion?
Yes, I took that as a motion. We do need a second.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right, thank you. Discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. All right. excuse me. I'd like to move agenda item number 12, A and B, to address that at this time. Do we have Ms. Packenham, would you discuss that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll introduce our former student interns. They completed their work essentially in late April. And we're going to start with Caitlin Doherty. So Caitlin, as I indicated, has 1 year left of her of the program, the compliance, healthcare compliance and regulation program at ASU. And she was tasked with a very ambitious research agenda project, and she'll have some slides to share with you because there's a lot of material to cover. Not all of it, of course, was specific to behavior analysts, but as this group was sort of identifying issues to research during your stakeholder meetings, Ms. Doherty was very gracious in, you know, adding all of those new tasks to the list of items to research. So just by way of my little introduction, in the slide deck, obviously I'm preaching to a choir here when I say that data collection is really essential with respect to advancing any change, and including public policy changes. And so the collection efforts and the analysis that Ms. Doherty has performed, I think, will be enduring and very useful to us moving forward. She sort of created a foundation that we can build on in terms of, you know, continuing or adding to the data that we have assembled. And I am excited to have her do an overview of what she learned and what her conclusions were with this group. So, Caitlin, you're welcome to take it from here.
Yeah, so I'm just gonna go ahead and share my screen and present this. Okay, so this is just kind of the introduction that Heidi just went over, but these are all the tasks that I completed over this semester. And so I'll be going through these one by one. So first I looked into claims opened as complaints. And as you can see, I found that on average since 2016, 28% of claims submitted have been opened as complaints. So obviously this isn't the majority, but that is still a decent amount of these claims being opened. And so this is an important process to keep. So then I looked at complaints dismissed versus referred. So I looked back to 2015 through 2021. 2020 was the outlier, with it being the only year where more claims were referred to the board than dismissed. So this shows, like, especially if you take 2020 out, that by having this committee in place, it is limiting the amount of complaints that have to be reviewed by the full board, and is saving the board as a whole more time and resources by doing so. So I think it is an important process to keep in place. So continuing with this, I then looked at who uses complaint screening committees out of the different states and provinces. So this, I went through all of their websites and just looked for the information. So in the United States, I found that 62% do utilize a complaint screening committee. And then for the provinces, 83% do. So in both cases, this is the majority. The one thing that I did find while doing this research is that the structure and who the committee reports directly to varies greatly depending on the state and province. So this is something that I definitely think could be looked into further, and finding what structure would be the most effective if this is something that Arizona's board wants to improve upon. So next, I looked at violations categorized by type within the last 10 years. So I looked through all of the board actions on the website, and I found that there were three main violations that made up 53% of the total violations. So these were failing to maintain adequate records of services, providing services that were unnecessary, unsafe, or unprofessional by standards of practice, and violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. So those three, as I said, equal 53% of violations, which is definitely the majority here. And so this is something that I believe could be used in the future with designing CE credits or something like that, to try and get licensees more educated on these three topics to try and get the violation occurrences down. So next with this task, I then grouped the violations into four categories. And this is something that me, Heidi, and Jennifer sat down and agreed upon, because this did have definitely opinion in play with it. So we decided on the four categories of committing an act with a great risk of harm, committing an act with a low to medium risk of harm, failing to act with a high risk of harm, and failing to act with a low to medium risk of harm. So as you can see from this chart, the majority at 56% were committing an act with a great risk of harm, which is alarming, because this means these licensees are acting in a way that is causing the violation. It's not ignorance or not knowing. So I found that very alarming. So next, I looked at investigative report requests. So unfortunately, this was the task that I was able to gather the least amount of data for, because this is a task that was dependent on responses from other states. So in Arizona, licensees can request a copy of their investigative report for a fee. This, I found, was the outlier. In the majority of states who we did get responses from, they stated that the report is confidential and the licensees cannot request it. Out of the ones where licensees were able to request at least a portion of the report, there wasn't a cost associated with it. So it was the only one who had a fee associated with the report. So next, I looked into continuing education audits. So every state and province that had accessible information on their website does conduct CE audits. Not all of these states had detailed processes of their audit available, but the ones that did, the majority conduct their audits annually, as well as the they are usually conducted by selecting random samples of licensees who are then required to provide documentation of their continuing education credits. So for the majority of the process, a lot of it is uniform across the different states and provinces. The one area where there was the most variance was in failure of the audit. So there were a lot of different penalties, including possible disciplinary action, hearings, expired licenses, and an extension of time to either complete the CE credits or to compile documentation and resubmit it. So next I'm moved into the behavioral analysis. So the first thing I looked at was the different state definitions for behavioral analysis, as well as the definition for client. So most of the states had a definition that began with something very similar to the design, implementation, and evaluation of instructional and environmental modifications to produce socially significant improvements in human behavior. So looking at client, most of the states did not have a definition for client. I went back and looked for patient, and again, most did not have that definition available, which I found very surprising, because when I think of like a behavioral analysis, I think of the two main parties of being the behavioral analysis and then the patient. So I found that very surprising. But then we went back to this task and then looked at what states include what the BA is not within the definition. So Arizona is one of them that does include this. And there were seven total. So as you can see on the chart, this is in the minority, as 61% don't include what a BA is not. So this is definitely something that can be looked back on if this is something that Arizona wants to change, or if they want to continue to include what the BA is not within their definition. So here is just a timeline of the enactment dates of behavioral analysis across the states. So currently there are 31 states being licensed. So the first was Oklahoma, and Arizona was one of the next in 2010. And so as you can see, as we go forward in time, more and more states are licensing BAs. So hopefully this is a continuing trend and we soon have 50 states licensing them. So this next slide is just a map of the current states that are licensing BAs. And then I next looked at the BA app AIR data. So for this, I looked through the minutes between 2019 and 2021 and identified for each applicant if there was an error or not, and then put it into an Excel sheet. So errors within applications slow down the licensure process, and they create more work for the board as well as the applicants. So within that time frame between 2019 and 2021, I identified 31 types of errors within the applications. So the three most common types were supervised experience conducted by individuals who may not meet the requirements to be supervising, supervised experience may not meet the requirements as a whole, or non-sufficient supervision hours were completed and therefore do not meet requirements. So as you can see, the most common error types all had to do with the supervised experience. And then, so doing the math on this, between 2019 and 2021, on average 20.7 of applications in an error, which is a very high number. That's one out of every five applications. So I think this is something that needs to be looked into further to try and get that error rate down to speed up the process of applications. And then just if anyone has any questions.
Very well done.
Yeah. I think for myself, I got to see this as part of the larger board presentation, Caitlin, and again, just with thank you for pulling this all together and giving us the review of what you found. Particularly, I think, as I brought up in the board meeting, you know, because of how the practice of behavior analysis worked its way through into a licensure status in the state and really across the country, you know, you are going to see that the Model Licensure Act that was originally developed by APBA, the BACB, and with some input from Autism Speaks really permeates throughout the country in terms of what the licensure laws look like and really kind of reflect an iterative process as we got better as a field working through becoming licensed and recognized as licensed professionals in the state. And so I think that, you know, for those that are on the call that are not aware of that, you know, as we kind of move
except through, for Ms. Gracie, so they both, like, they just go out.
As we just kind of work through two more states that just signed licensure in the last couple of weeks, we have Indiana, North Carolina, and you're going to see us continue to kind of, I think, reflect upon what's worked in the licensure bills and what hasn't. And so it's been quite a process, to say the least.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for I guess really the committee members or those of you who have been involved in this process in the past, but is there any intention or any plans to update the Model Practice Act for regulation of behavior analysis?
I can speak that it's been updated, I think most recently, maybe in the last like 18 months. I think what you still see in there is a lot of stop gaps. In fact, you know, after we had the discussion on the board, I reached out to a couple of people and talked about the what is not behavior analysis. And the reason that stays in the model is because there are particular states that are still pushing that, that there's appears to be this turf war between psychologists and behavior analysts, which we do not have here in the state. We fully recognize we each have distinct scope of practices, distinct areas of expertise, and very rarely do they really intersect, particularly around diagnostic work. And so, you know, you see some of this language in there, I think, as, you know, almost as choose your own adventure, depending on the state you're in. and I know we've had that discussion of being like discussing, like, why do we have that in here? Why do we, this is not a contentious piece of statute and regulation. But at the time, you know, those that were around, it was a little contentious. You know, there was some discussion about behavior analysts becoming licensed and the history of how we ended up under the psychology board versus another board such as behavioral health. And so, you know, I don't think that's going to be stripped out anytime soon from the model. I think it is, the model presents itself as here's the information you may need to make this work, but choose wisely.
That was really well done. The data are very helpful to understand. I would we be able to get a copy of at least the report or the slides in the future? Okay, great.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, can I make a couple more comments, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. So I'm pleased to report that Caitlin is, she's accepted a new role with our organization. She is providing temporary licensing support to Kathy, to our agency this summer in between her junior and senior year. So we're thrilled to have her. She's already made a tremendous amount of progress getting us caught up on a backlog of tasks. So at least through June 30th, she will be with us and potentially into the rest of the summer as well. So it's a pleasure to have her around in that capacity. And then so Jennifer Michelson won't let me have an intern this summer for reasons that are entirely appropriate. We have a lot on our plates, but I, of course, intend to have another, at least one intern in the fall. And so if this group is interested in any particular research that we weren't able to do with Caitlin, I would love for you to send me those ideas. You can just send them to me separately via email, and we'll prepare that the next research agenda for the next intern.
I would just add that really for Ms. Caitlin, I just have one, you know, I would say it's a pretty serious concern, and that is with regard to your Washington State Cougar sign behind you. And that is upsetting to me on several levels, having lived in Spokane for a lot of years. And so we'll have to have some discussions about that as you work towards a, you know, more permanent position.
Dr. Davey?
So it is my dad.
Oh, it's your father's?
Dr. Davey, be careful. My mother graduated from there and supported me for several years due to her education at Washington State University.
We have a lot of ties to Eastern Washington on this call today. Dr. Stenhoff, Caitlin's father, myself.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin.
Okay, Ms. Hackenau, do we move on to B at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So it's my pleasure to introduce Elizabeth. She had an entirely different type of internship project. I had to persuade her ever so slightly to accept this one because I think it was probably a bit more outside of what her program has preparing her to do. It definitely challenged her to tap into her creativity while at the same time, you know, doing a lot of research and, you know, sort of thinking about what we can enhance for our messaging to our primary constituency, our primary stakeholders, which is the public. So we knew that we had limited time for the period of time for her internship. So we tasked her with creating a video for consumers of psychology services. And so we want to share that with you. And in the process, I think you'll be able to envision what we can do for the behavior analyst video that she will soon be working on as a freelancer for our agency. So I think that we'll let the video speak for itself and Elizabeth can show us what she created.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Elizabeth. I'm going to share my screen now and show the video.
The Arizona Board of Psychologists and Examiners protects the health, safety, and welfare of Arizona citizens by licensing and regulating psychologists and behavior analysts. On our website, you can find information about licensing, complaints, and practice laws. This video addresses how the board protects psychology patients. What is a psychologist? A psychologist is a person who is licensed to practice psychology, defined as the psychological assessment, diagnosis, treatment, or correction of mental, emotional, behavioral, psychological abilities, illnesses, or disorders. As a psychology patient, you are entitled to certain rights. Your rights to records that minimally contain sufficient information to identify you, the dates, fees, payments, types of services given, and copies of any reports. You also have the right to confidentiality and to know when a psychologist is legally able to disclose your personal information. You have the right to a safe treatment environment that is free from sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. How do you know whether to file a complaint? You should file a complaint when unprofessional conduct by a psychologist is alleged to have occurred. If you are unsure about filing a complaint, or if you need more information, you can look here on our website. When reading this material, you will also notice that there is an option to fill out a claim. Claims are filed only when the allegation concerns a court-ordered psychologist. When filing a complaint, you want to ensure you are filing with the correct board. The Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners specifically handles cases involving licensed psychologists. If you are unsure about where to send a complaint, you can reach out to Jennifer, our Deputy Director, for more information. Here you can perform a license search to confirm your care provider as a licensed psychologist. If you do not find the name you are looking for, you can reach out for more direction. When should you file a complaint? File as soon as possible. With few exceptions, the statute of limitations for filing a complaint is 4 years. What happens when your complaint is received? When a complaint is received, it is first reviewed by the Board's Complaint Screening Committee, or CSC, composed of one public member and two psychologist members of the board. You may attend the review and address the CSC. After review, the CSC can decide to dismiss the complaint, have a full board review of the complaint, or request additional information. If the complaint is sent for a full board review, you will again have the opportunity to address the board. While board meetings are public, your identity and health information is kept confidential. What happens after the complaint is reviewed by the board? Board actions include dismissal, issuing non-disciplinary action, or ordering corrective or disciplinary action. The board's past actions can be found on the website under Board Investigations. If you have any further questions about filing a complaint, feel free to reach out. The board is always here to help.
Uh, I would also just like to clarify that I had to change a word in the video, so I had to re-record a whole part. So the timing at the end was a little bit off, but I can easily change that. It just didn't save correctly when I went back to redo it. So sorry about that.
I like this. I think it'll be helpful for the consumers, definitely. So
for sure.
Good work.
Yeah. It's so much easier than actually reading everything.
Yeah, and it, just to chime in, this, of course, isn't intended to replace, you know, the very detailed explanation of the complaints and claims process on the website and the reporting forms themselves, but to augment that information. And hopefully, as a first point of entry into considering filing a complaint, you know, provide some transparency in terms of what to expect and so forth. So we think it's friendly and it's, you know, it really does, it addresses what we think are important consumer concerns and questions. And it's really frustrating, and Elizabeth can speak to this far better than me, but it's frustrating to look for model guidelines or information that is targeted specifically at consumers that regulatory boards share. I think, Elizabeth, you can tell us what little you found in your research process.
Yeah, honestly, when I was doing my research, I didn't find anything that was super consumer friendly. I looked at a bunch of different psychologist boards for different states, and I even looked in this state at like the nursing board and dental board. There were a bunch of other ones I looked at, and there was nothing like this video for consumers. And we also wanted to keep it short so that it would keep people's attention, and they would be able to get like all the main information that they needed. And for the BA video, that one will be a little bit longer because we're going to focus on actually describing what a BCBA is and like the difference between RBTs. And we go a little bit more into the practice laws of that one too. So that one will be a little bit longer, but it'll generally be about the same thing.
Yes, and that process is already in development. I think we're very close to finalizing the script for it already. So as Elizabeth is looking for her first professional position, she has the time to spend on this project with us. And we're grateful to Ms. Denton. She's our subject matter expert for the behavior analyst content for this video. So we've been working with her, and it's really been exciting to see this project coming together as well.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments on that agenda item? Okay, given that, thank you, Elizabeth, that was good. It's a clean video, and I think it's going to be pretty helpful. So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing the BA video once that's done in production. So okay, so let's we're going to juggle again a little bit. So let's go to agenda item number 6A, and we're going to take 6A 21. I am recused from this application, and Dr. David, I'm going to hand it over to you at this time.
Very good. Thank you. So I see that Melissa Harrison is here with us today, and so I appreciate her being on the call.
Really quick, I'm on the call now. I am also recused, so I will be off of this matter as well.
And Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson did join at 10:06.
All right, so just by way of background here, and I'm not going to do as good a job as Ms. Michelson would do, but I'm going to take this one for the team. Really, we have Melissa Harrison came forward for application to become a behavior analyst. The application in and of itself is completed appropriately and is completed in a fashion that would allow it to move forward to the full board for consideration. There were no concerns there. The issue really arises that there was a period of time where Ms. Harrison was providing supervision to individuals in the state working towards licensure where she shouldn't have. this, you know, this was an information that was self-disclosed by the applicant. The applicant came forward. The hours were about 90 hours. The applicant went ahead and, you know, really in stark contrast to the other information that I was discussing earlier today, this individual, this potential licensee went forward and contacted those that this impacted, sent letters explaining what would happened, had them sign off that they understood that those hours would have to be forfeited because she was not licensed at the time that she was providing that supervision, and really did an effort to remediate the error that she had encountered in terms of providing supervision without being licensed. In the documentation, the board should be able to see those letters, be able to see the signatures for the individuals that she reached out to. And so that's kind of a summary of where we stand today. With that, Ms. Harrison, do you have anything you'd like to add? And then, you know, I think we'll kind of discuss this as a board and move forward.
No, sir. Thank you for taking my case into consideration.
Thank you. So, you know, in my estimation, and I'll say this to the board, then I'll open it up for other discussions. The application is completed. I see no reason to not move it forward for acceptance for a licensee. I think Ms. Harrison recognized what had gone on. She self-disclosed what had gone on. She fixed the situation before it got out of control. She did everything she possibly could to remediate her error. And I, for one, you know, think that that was the appropriate response. And I think that it was an accurate response to what had occurred. Do my other fellow committee members have any other thoughts on this?
I would just echo your statements. I think there was a lot of effort to identify what happened to quickly resolve it as best she could. So I would echo your statements. Thank you.
Does the committee care to receive legal advice in executive session?
It sounds like we should. I can't move to do that.
Yes, you can.
Oh, I'll move us to executive session.
For the purpose of receiving legal advice.
Yes, I'm going to make a motion to move us to executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice.
I'll second that.
All in favor, aye. Aye. Thank you for bringing us back into a full session. So again, just kind of bring the committee back to where we stand. So we have an individual that, again, provided supervision to potential LBAs in our state, which is a violation of our statute and our rules. This individual was made aware of this situation, self-reported it to the board, to the committee, and went forward to inform those that she potentially affected in terms of hours, and reached out to them to explain the situation, took responsibility, had them sign off that they understood that those hours could not be counted, and attempted to remediate the situation to the best of her ability. And that's where we stand today. And now we have the same individual who is looking to be able to receive licensure in the state so that she can continue in those activities and providing services to families in the state of Arizona in a legal fashion. So that's just to kind of bring us back to where we're at. You know, I stated my opinion prior to getting into the legal session. My opinion has not changed. I welcome the opinion of the other committee members at this time.
I think I agree with all that you've said, Dr. Davey. I think there is still this concern of an individual engaging in this and not fully understanding what needs to happen and the all of the pieces involved to ensure that when you're providing that supervision, you're not doing so unlicensed. That said, I agree with you. I think there is a lot to be said for identifying this on your own, for bringing this to the board, for reaching out, and as you said, doing all that you can to make that known. I think that's very different than when these things are uncovered. And I think it's important to note that, that this was something that was brought to us and lots of things were done to try to at least mitigate that. So Ms. Denton, do you have any thoughts as well? I tend to agree that we move this forward.
I would agree. I think that all of us as behavior analysts want to differentially reinforce behavior. We do understand the all or nothing reinforcement schedule. So as we're looking at this, I think that it should be commended that someone did come forward. I would agree that the situation is different than some that we have seen. I also acknowledge that it would set precedent for other individuals who would come forward and in this position. And I think given all of the information that has been provided, I would like to see that we honor the self-reporting, that, you know, though those 90 hours are non-repeatable, you know, that we did have supervisees impacted by that, that this applicant is attempting to move forward with the legal avenue, making sure that they are licensed, making sure that everything is provided according to our rule and statute. And I would agree with both of my fellow committee members.
Thank you, committee members. So I think since this is actually part of, I'm going to make sure I reference it right on the agenda. This actually falls under, where are we? Where is it? What agenda? I can't find the agenda item. Where are we at?
Item number six.
Six.
Number 21.
21, thank you. Oh, thank you. All right, so really what we need here, and again, I'm gonna seek some advice. We really just need a motion to move this application forward, correct, as part of the slate.
And that would include a recommendation to grant full licensure.
Okay. So can I make that motion or does that have to come from somebody else since I'm chair?
You can make it.
All right, then I'll make a motion to move Ms. Harrison's application to the board for full licensure.
I will second.
Any discussion? Again, I just want to reiterate for the record that the underlying facts are that this was self-disclosed and that there were significant efforts to reach out to those that were affected and make an explanation and make amends to them and to inform them of the consequence. Ms. Harrison's application has been held up for a significant period of time as we've looked over this information. And I would just state that the committee at this point believes that Ms. Harrison understands the situation, understands what it requires to operate in the state of Arizona, and therefore sees those as kind of mitigating factors as it relates to providing supervision without the appropriate credential in the state of Arizona at this time. With that, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you very much.
Dr. Davis Wilson and Dr. Stenoff recused.
Yes, and for the record, two recusals. And then when we go through, we'll make sure to list her on the list of under 6A, 21 to move forward.
Okay.
I think that concludes this matter. Can we bring Dr. Stenoff back in?
Okay, let's see here. Okay, so do we have Ms. Collins on the phone at this time? Do we want to reach out to her? It's 10:30.
Do not see her on here. I will send her an email.
Okay.
She's going to be joining around 10:30, so we can go to the other
okay.
Anytime.
All right, so let's move on to agenda item number 6A, 4. Christina Alvarez, Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that one. Would you summarize that for us?
Yes. So Ms. Alvarez received her BCBA in March of 2021. She received a master's degree at Ball State in 2020. Her supervision occurred between February of 18 and February of 21. And that supervision occurred both in San Diego and in Arizona for a total of 1,508 hours. In reviewing the application, there was a yes response to question 12. Looking at all of the documentation that was submitted, there was an incident just over 3 years ago. As I said, reviewing that, the incident has been resolved. All requirements have been met. I would highlight that Ms. Alvarez reported immediately and then again as there were updates across time to both the BACB and her employer. There have not been any other incidents since listed. So I would suggest that we move this forward and would open it up to my committee members.
I don't have any comments. I'd agree.
Yeah, it appears that this incident is in the past. Quickly reported it to the BACB at the time where she was needed to. I don't have any concerns at this time.
All right. Let's see. Let's move on to agenda item number 6A, number 20. Brittany Messina, I would like to go to executive session for legal counsel, please.
Dr. Stenhoff, I am recused from this matter.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I am also recused from this matter.
All right, thank you, Ms. Denton.
Is there a second and a vote?
Yes, final second.
Okay. This committee became aware of some additional information, and at this time we're going to table this application for further investigation by the board staff. So we will be moving on to the next agenda item. Okay, so I'm going to move back to agenda item number 5B. Are we in a position to hear that at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've just admitted the licensee to the...
The respondent, Ms. Collins, is here. She just joined. Right.
Okay. Great, thank you. Okay, Dr. Davis-Wilson, your lead on this. I've already gave some preliminary discussion on this. So the next complaint for review today is agenda item number 6B, complaint P-21-02 against Ms. Brandy Collins. Dr. Davis Wells is the lead committee member for this complaint. Would you please provide the committee with an overview of the case?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Upon review of an applicant's licensure request, the committee felt that we may need to speak with Ms. Collins about potential violation of ARS 32-2091.12. The statute prohibits any use or combination of the words, initial symbols that leads the public to believe that a person may be representing themselves as licensed to practice in Arizona. We sent a letter, board staff sent a letter to Ms. Collins regarding the facts of the matter that led us to opening the complaint. And Ms. Collins did reply with a substantial amount of information explaining her position. Ms. Collins is a licensed behavior analyst in Texas. She states that she was asked to provide supervision of unrestricted hours for Ms. Huff And that during that arrangement, Ms. Huff did disclose to her that she would have a separate supervisor that was licensed in Arizona to supervise her BCABA work. Ms. Collins did review the complaint, the concerns, as well as the proceedings. She listened to the recordings of previous meetings and stated that she was concerned at the representation, that she felt Ms. Huff misrepresented some of the nature of their relationship, specifically that there was no client-specific supervision that occurred, that Ms. Huff was not providing services to in Texas for or on behalf of Ms. Collins' organizations or clients, and that Ms. Huff was not the developer of the RBT training, as she stated in her correspondence with us to in review of her application. Ms. Collins says that, again, she was just there to provide supervision for unrestricted hours. Upon being notified that the hours did not meet licensure requirements, Ms. Collins did end the supervision contract and has not corresponded with Mr. or Mrs. Huff since that time, and it remains her opinion that she did not provide any services to Arizona clients or provide services, behavior analytic services, in the state of Arizona. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Ms. Collins, I believe you're present. Is that correct? I see your name on there.
Yes, I am present.
Great. Would you please state your full name for the record? And you now have an opportunity to make a brief statement to the committee. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
My name is Brandy Collins. I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I'm a board certified behavior analyst and a certified brain injury specialist here in Texas. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to speak to the board and clarify any questions or concerns that the board have at this moment, and definitely to clear the intentional misrepresentations that Ms. Huff presented to the board. Also to let the board know that I was unaware that Ms. Huff had any of these issues going on, or that there were any previous hearings, none of which I was made aware of. And in my attempts to reach out to Ms. Huff since then, I have not been able to reach out to her. I've had no communication with Ms. Huff for more than a year and a half at this point. But I have provided the board with all the documentation necessary to include my communication with her, where she states specifically that she had a separate supervisor for her BCABA work done in Arizona. And again, to restate, that at no point in time have I ever interacted with any clients that she had. And at no point in time has she ever interacted with any clients or staff that I have in the state of Texas. I was unaware that Ms. Huff was even had any credentials in the state of Texas. Many of these things I've learned from going back, listening to the public hearing that you guys had. And in closure, I'd like to say that I'm extremely nervous. My intention when I first found out, when I first received the letter in the mail, was to come to this hearing and to come with legal representation. However, I kind of got a little bit of late notice on it and was unable to come. So I will just be representing myself. But I thank you for your time and I thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Collins. Appreciate you being here. The committee will now begin the deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complaints, respondents, or attorneys representing respondents. Dr. Davis Wilson, since you're lead on the in this case, would you please begin the deliberation?
Yes, but can we see if any board members have any questions for Ms. Collins before we begin deliberations?
Yes, that would be appropriate.
All right. I guess committee members, does any committee members have any questions for Ms. Collins?
I mean, I guess the questions that I have, I mean, I don't know if they're going to come out later, but it really is to the question of, like, to her statement of, like, the misrepresentation that was, that she alluded to. Like, specifically, what are these misrepresentations? If she would elaborate upon that, I would greatly appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. In the second hearing, and I'm not really sure because I listened to it, like, via my phone. I'm not sure if that was, like, at the 3-hour and 47-minute mark or somewhere up in there. But the question was asked of Ms. Huff, under which guidance would she be providing like RBT training, under which guidance, something like that. And she said, she's fair. Absolutely not. She has never provided any form of RBT, any form that nature that relates to a business that I own, nor has she ever asked for me to supervise her in that way. So it leads to believe that our businesses were intertwined or that I had a hand 100%, not that. So solely she was getting her indirect hours. She was already a BCABA when she and I met. I am on the Capella University alumni website. So I'm in the mentorship program. She reached out via Capella University. She only needed the additional 500 hours. They were all indirect. We followed a strict curriculum. There was individual as well as group assignment. To the exception of this issue, I did not have received this in the mail that these statements were being made or that there was a public hearing with an assistant attorney general where my name and my license and things that I've worked for very, very hard were being discussed or implied. It was pretty basic for me to get licensure in that state. I would not intentionally put my license reason like that. That whole process would serve me not well at all. And so the only thing that I can think is that those statements were made, or that she continued to say that things were done under the guidance of me, is because she doesn't want to be honest. But it most certainly was not me. I sent the email to the board to ask the question. It said, hey, you know, I have a supervisee who is seeking hours or seeking something with the form. I provided the documentation that shows that Paige said that she was like trying to apply, but they said she didn't have enough hours or something like that. And so she said she had went above and beyond the hours, like maybe you need 15. It wasn't enough, but she asked if I could submit the supplemental documentation to show that she had gone above and beyond. And so I sent the email to say, hey, I have this form, but it says, where did it take place? And I said that it took place remote. I was told no. I informed her. And that chapter was closed. She didn't come back to me to continue to ask. Sounded to me, or was perceived by me, that I was actively providing behavior analytics services in Arizona, which I was not, or that I was trying to circumvent the system or something along those manners. Once I was told that that was not okay, I didn't submit the paperwork. But my intention to initially submit it was just to give her supplement or documentation to show, yes, she has continued to go ahead and get more hours. I hope what I'm saying makes sense.
Hey, your connection is a little dicey. Everyone's it's breaking up a little bit. But it's like it would slow down and it would speed right back up. And so thank you for walking us through that. I would just the reason I asked is you know, there are some in our report, like based on kind of what you had stated back to us, the misrepresentations that were laid out. I believe that we've captured some of those that I'll just refer to page 5 of the investigative report for the committee in case they missed some of the audio there that talks about what Ms. Combs is refuting, if anybody needs to reference those 3 bullet points. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from Ms. Combs? Okay, so none. Let's move into deliberations. Dr. Davis-Wilson, would you start us off on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I first want to, you know, just comment that I appreciate Ms. Collins being here and I appreciate her thorough response. To me, all of it makes sense. The unrestricted hours to make up the difference between BCABA to BCBA requirements set for the BACB all align with the BACB standards. The documentation that we have does indicate that there was a second Arizona supervisor. And during the period of time in which we have potential practice without a supervisor, we've already adjudicated that specifically with the applicant. I think that the description provided of Ms. Collins' supervision is aligned with, but does not, in my opinion, rise to any statutory violations. There were no Arizona specific, you know, residents or clients receiving services or being supervised for services. could there be a misunderstanding or misrepresentation of presentation of what some of those tasks included? Sure, but again, those issues have already been adjudicated with that particular individual. And so, you know, from I want to, you know, make sure that we open it up for others. But from my perspective, I really don't have any concerns with Ms. Collins' response. And I'll save the motion to see if anybody else has any additional comments.
Committee members, other comments?
Not at this time.
Great. Hearing none, then I would move that we go ahead and dismiss this complaint. Like I said, I think that even the information that she has shared with us was information that we also had uncovered and adjudicated. And that matter's been addressed. I move that we dismiss Ms. Collins' complaint.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, I believe it would actually need to be a motion to recommend to the board that the complaint be dismissed. This was ultimately opened by the board, so it would need to go to that process, and we could certainly put it on the June 4th agenda, that recommendation on there.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Okay, discussion?
Hey. I just wanted to real quick just thank Ms. Collins. I know that this is a very nerve-wracking process, and I appreciate her being here today, answering our questions, providing us that thorough response. It is immensely helpful when individuals are able to participate in these discussions so that we can kind of sort through everything that's going on. So thank you, Ms. Collins, for joining us.
I concur. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Okay, so let's put this to a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? All right,
Mr. Senhoff, right. Mr. Chair, Dr. Senhoff, if I may,
oh, yes, sir.
I'd like to just let Ms. Collins know that because we are just a committee, all we can do is recommend to the full board. And what they'll do is they'll review our recommendation, and the board staff will notify you of when they're going to review that recommendation. And then you can attend that meeting as well, which it appears that we'll probably get that through on the June agenda, which is next Friday. And you'll be noticed of all of this. I just don't want you to be shocked when they say, hey, there's going to be another meeting. This is just the committee making the recommendation to the full board. The full board's the one that will make the decision.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
And just to add on to what Dr. Davis Wilson was saying, Ms. Collins, I will be in touch with you by email today, but we will be adding it to the board's next agenda meeting, which is on Friday, June 4th. So I'll be in touch later this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. We've been dabbling this a bit, but let's move on again to agenda item number 6 consideration action regarding recommendation of the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. Going to our first applicant, Dr. Davis Wilson, would you please leave the discussion on that?
Yes, the applicant is Alyssa Duguay. She passed her exam in April of 2021. She completed her master's in special education in 2013 from Our Lady of Elms College. And then she completed NAU's PBS graduate program in November of 2020. She did receive 1,500 hours of supervision between the periods of February 2020 and February 2021 across 3 different licensed behavior analysts. I've reviewed her application and I have no concerns and recommend that it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Okay, thank you. Agenda item number or second application, Dr. Davey, your lead on that.
Thank you. Am I unmuted? Can't even find my screen.
I can hear you.
Thank you. I've got PDFs open over here. I got an agenda over here. I've got God knows what's going on over there. Thank you. Ms. Childs brings her application forward for consideration of licensure. I reviewed the application. It was completed in full. She notes having gone through Alvarno College in Milwaukee for biology and chemistry, but then moving on to University of Wisconsin for experimental psychology and behavior analysis. Lists her employment as being in, or her experience as being in Wisconsin. Provided information with regard to her supervisors and proper attestation forms. I had reached out to board staff just around one thing, and Kathy, were we able to get any information or get the professional supervisors section updated at all?
Yes, it's uploaded to the G Drive. If you refresh, it should be there.
Thank you. And so the only thing I noted is and again, I was not trying to be nitpicky, and so I'm going to say this out loud because it just was, when I went through and originally looked at item 24, the supervisor, the only thing that was listed were their Cs, CCs, you know, being an SLP, and the BCBA, the individual is also a BCBA, which is just outstanding, but knowing that supervision is required by someone who holds that BCBA, particularly even in BACB guidelines, I was just concerned that on the public record that that's how that read. In many cases, it's left blank without credentials or with the BCBA listed. And so I just asked board staff to reach out and have her add the BCBA or to remove the credentials entirely, just so there was no confusion on the public record. Thank you, board staff, for doing so. And I apologize for being difficult. With that, I move that this application be moved forward move forward for consideration of full licensure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Denton, would you take our third applicant?
I will. Ms. Amy Solger is seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She passed her BACB exam in September of 2012. She graduated from Pennsylvania State University in May of 2012, so just a few months before, with a master's in science in special education. With this, the entirety of her 1,500 hours of supervision occurred in the state of Florida. Her supervision dates are listed as December 2019 to December 2020. So with this, it appears that the number of hours requirement has been met. Licensure is not required in the state of Florida, so the supervisor who provided that doesn't have any challenge with that. I did want to see if any of my committee members, I think the dates kind of rose a question for me, given that she was certified in 2012 and then went through supervision in 2019 and 2020. I took a look at the supervisor who provided that, which was Tara Sivena, which appeared to be in a lateral position to Ms. Solger, both being clinical directors. I don't know if I'm digging too deep into this, but I wanted to see if there are any questions or concerns from other committee members before moving forward. To add an additional comment, it is very possible that she sought additional supervision. She doesn't have record of the original because it's been past 7 years since she was certified. I think I'm just making a lot of assumptions here due to the lack of information, and I'm not sure if there are any concerns from my fellow committee members.
Mr. Chair, if I may, there's potentially three or four different options that would make this allowable. I err on the side of Ms. Denton, though, is in that I don't know that we can just make those assumptions. And I think that we need to at least think of precedents that has been set in areas like this, which has typically been just a request for additional information, to just clear up that confusion.
Mr. Chair, committee members, if I may.
Please.
I just wanted to have the board or the committee be aware that the supervisor who signed this form is also the applicant from our last committee meeting where you did request additional information regarding a similar situation and hours. And we have not received those documents yet, but it's the same practice.
Mr. Chair, unless there's any other comments or questions from my fellow committee members, I would like to move that we issue a first letter of requested information. That's the right order there. I think that just having some additional information would help to clarify and ensure that there aren't any barriers to moving this forward to the full board for approval.
And I would second that, Ms. Denton, just as just one point of clarification, the form that they submitted is able to be signed by anybody who is knowledgeable of the experience. So it doesn't necessarily have to be signed by the person who provided the experience. So I just wanted to make that comment, but I do second that. I think that we need additional information to provide clarification.
Okay, thank you. Do we need to make a motion and a second for that to take care of this now?
We've got a motion and a second on the table.
Okay, perfect. Any discussion or further discussion? Hey, okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Okay, our next applicant is Christopher Morris. I did the review for that. He received his BCBA certificate in July of 2020. He graduated in 2008 from the University of Phoenix with a Master's of Education, and then finished his ABA training at the Florida Institute of Technology in 2020. He received 1,512 hours of supervision under three supervisors who are all licensed in Arizona. And I did not know any concerns with this application. Are there any further comments from committee members? Okay. All right, thank you. All right, next application is Christina Martinez, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, Dr. Stenhoff, Ms. Martinez passed her exam in June of 2020. She completed her master's in psychology in October of 2019 from the International University of Valencia. She also did an ABA España from and completed that certificate on October of 2018. She did do 1,500 supervised hours between the periods of November 2017 and December 2018 for 1,500 hours in Florida where licensure is not required. I actually would like to move that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second. Do it second.
I will second that.
All right.
I'm done with... When we're done with this matter, I still see that Brittany Messina is on the line.
Yeah.
We may want to inform her what took place after you're done with this case.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Chair, I have reviewed Ms. Martinez's application in full, and I have no concerns with her application, and I move that we recommend the full board approval.
Thank you. Ms. Messina, are you on the line now?
Yes, hi. When you called my application, I was going from a class and I lost connection.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair.
That's fine. With some of the newer information that just arose, the board staff are going to need to do a little bit additional investigation. They will get with you about that soon.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. All right, next application. Daria Gwynn, Dr. Davey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Davey, I apologize for being extremely obnoxious, but can I move that we go into executive session for legal advice?
Yeah, is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Dr. Davey.
Thank you. Application here for Ms. Gwynn. I reviewed the application, completely filled out. Individual identified that they were involved at the University of ASU, Special Education, Concentration in Applied Behavior Analysis. Did have a master's in arts and psychology, as well as a bachelor in arts psychology from a university in Ukraine. Individual went out and sought supervision at Brother Avenue, and that was for supervision as well as for licensure. The individuals that provided that licensure and supervision attested for her work. And again, thanks to board staff with the multiple supervisors from one location document, making my life easy. I saw no issues with this applicant, and I would like to see it move forward to the full board for approval.
All right. Dr. Davey. Next application is Eileen Dale. Ms. Denton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eileen Dale passed her exam in April of 2021, another speedy applicant coming to our agenda. She graduated from Arizona State University in August of 2020 with a Master's of Arts in Special Education with a concentration in Applied Behavior Analysis. The supervision dates were from June 2019 to December of 2021. 1,587 hours occurred under three different supervisors. I will echo Dr. Davies' sentiments of loving the multiple supervisor form because it showed easily and quickly that they were all licensed in the state of Arizona. I have no questions or concerns regarding this application, and would open it up to fellow committee members before moving forward. Seeing none, I move that this, I see that Mr. Chair is speaking.
That's it, thanks, Ms. Dent.
I move that we move this to the board for approval, review.
Okay, next application, Carissa Glenn. Dr. Ray.
So Ms. Glenn received her BCBA in April of 21. She completed a master's.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I am recused from this matter.
She received a master's degree in clinical psychology in 2014 from Roosevelt University, and then an ABA certificate from Florida Institute of Technology in 2020. She received supervision between April of 18 and October of 20. Across two supervisors for a total of 1,618 hours. In reviewing that application, I didn't note any issues of concern and would look to see if there are questions from my committee members.
All right. Okay, next application is Kiana Kennedy. Ms. Kennedy received her BCBA certificate in April of 2021. She graduated in 2020 from Capella University with a Master of Science in Psychology. She received 448.56 hours according to the final verification forms under the supervision of Hall Law Mastroianni and Bonilla, licensed in Arizona, and 1,051.44 under Robles, Mejia, and Gutierrez, all licensed in Arizona for a total of 1,500 hours. I did note on the final verification form for the BACV that there was a total of 448.56 signed while the multiple supervisor or at one organization form had 1,250. And then 1,051.44 hours were signed, while the multiple supervisor at one organization form was 1,925.09. If that's not a concern, I'd say we go ahead and move forward. If there's further discussion, I'd like to hear.
Mr. Chair, because I am on a roll today, I did not go through the Google link to prepare for this meeting, and I did the website instead. And this applicant isn't on the website, so I actually did not review those materials. So I will be abstaining from this matter.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Davis. Okay, any issues? It appears that the applicant has enough hours. There's just a discrepancy between the BACB form and the multiple supervisors at one site form. Okay. All right, if there's no concerns, then I recommend that we move forward to the board for approval. Okay. All right, next applicant is Lauren Stowe, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yes, Ms. Stowe completed her exam in April of 2021. She is a certified teacher in good standing and provided us, and we were able to verify that information. She completed her master's in special education, the curriculum and instruction program through Arizona State University in December of 2020. She did complete her supervision 1,500 hours across two licensed behavior analysts from a period of October 2018 to December 2020. I have reviewed her application and have no concerns, recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you. All right. Next applicant is Lena Kazarine. Sorry, butchered it. Dr. Davey, maybe you can clean that up for me.
I was going with Kazari, but I'm sure that for the record, we both have butchered that. Nonetheless, the individual did an excellent job completing the application, answering all the questions in full, notes that she did her work at the Florida Institute of Technology for her coursework, Here in Arizona was worked at the Young Mind Center. I received her supervision under Emily Mariner. And in reviewing the application, the only thing I noted was, and I might have missed it, Kathy, was that proof of the supervisor's active license in the state of Arizona was not in the packet. I just ended up going to the board, to the website for those on the call. Her license number is listed. It is correct, 000030. It was issued first in 2011, and its next expiration date is not until 6/30/22. So she was approved to provide supervision during the period of which she did. And I have no issues with this application and suggest to move forward to the full board for approval.
Great, thanks, Dr. Bogan. Next application is Maya Jones. Are there any disclosures that would like to be made about this applicant?
Yes, I will need to recuse myself, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And I have a disclosure. I was Ms. Jones' instructor while she was a student.
Mr. Chair, given that, shall I review?
Please.
Excellent. Maya Jones completed the Master's of Science in Psychology from Arizona State University. She graduated in April of 2019 and passed her exam in November of 2019. She received her supervision all in the state of Arizona, totaling 1,537.75 hours, very precise, from May 30th, 2018 to June 30th, 2020. Given this information that her supervision continued even beyond her date of certification, she appears to have no problems with her application. I think there was, let me look here on the multiple supervisor form, I think there was a date error, but I don't think it is a large issue unless anyone else sees that. Oh yes, it states that Ashley Pruitt provided her supervision from January 3rd, 2020. She went back in time and retroactively did it until June 30th of 2010. So it depends on if we need to have this corrected. It appears to just be a nice typo. I would presume that should be 2020. Ashley Pruitt did provide 483.5 hours. And there is an error on that form, just in the date. Any comments from other committee members as to does that typo warrant a request to have her corrected and then move it forward?
The staff could probably ask her to correct that typo, ensure it is a typo, and you can make a recommendation to move it to the full board for approval upon receipt of that corrected date.
So moved.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ms. Ben. All right. Nadia Todd, Dr. Riggs.
Hello. Nadia received her BCBA in February of 2018. She indicated she's also licensed in Washington and Hawaii. Master's degree was completed from University of Cincinnati, and supervision occurred between February 2018 and December of 2019 under Caitlin Preciado, I hope I said that right, I'm sorry if I did not, for a total of 1,500 hours. I did not note any issues of concern with this application.
Okay, thank you. Next application is Naomi Furlong. I reviewed that. Ms. Furlong received her BCBA certificate in May of 2018. She graduated in 2016 from Kaplan University with a Master's of Science in Psychology and has been an LVA in the state of Washington since October of 2019. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Jenny Fisher, who was licensed in the state of Oregon. And I didn't note any concerns with this application, recommended it be forward to the board for approval. All right, next application is Samantha Rockford, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Ms. Rockford completed her exam in April of 2021. She did her master's through ASU's Special Education Curriculum and Instruction Program in August 2020 is when she graduated. She did supervision with four different supervisors. The bulk of her supervision was done in California, where licensure is not required. She then relocated to Arizona, and three supervisors oversaw her work. Supervision was from May of 2019 to February of 2021. Again, just over 1500 hours. This is probably just a silly little thing, but on question number six, the answer should be no, though she did answer yes. And so I don't know, it really is not super pertinent to the rest of the application, but I don't know if staff wants to go ahead and get that edited in. It's just asking if for the date she passed her exam, if she's not certified, or should be NA, or I think it's NA. She put her certification or her certification date in that line as well. The question number five already addresses that, and she answered that one appropriately.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Okay, I'm going to, well, let's just keep going here. I'm going to bring it up in a minute. Let's see. Shauna Ami, Dr. Davy.
Thank you. Reviewing the application, Ms. Files, were we able to get, again, the refresh, I may have missed it, were we able to get the missing pieces of information set up on this one?
It should be there, yes.
Okay, it just depended on when people downloaded or not. Application came forward. Originally, there was some missing items. Board staff reached out, got those clarified, as you will see on the most recent application that's uploaded to the portal. Individual went through Department of Psychology, studied applied behavior analysis at Ball State University. Individual completed the application in its entirety after some prompting from board staff. Supervision occurred in Virginia or in Colorado. Some work experience also in Virginia. Individual that signed off on supervision was in Colorado. Colorado does not have licensure, therefore the BACB certification was sufficient. Individual had also taken the proper supervision courses from the BACB to provide supervision. Thanks to board staff, I see no other issues with this application. I would vote that it move forward.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davy. Next application is Vanessa Waters-Trice. Ms. Denton, you review that for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going through this, I would ask that fellow committee members attend to dates for me as we go through this. So Trenisa Waters-Trice graduated in May of 2009 with her master's of education from the University of Detroit Mercy. And she is also enrolled in a PhD program through Capella University. And the dates of this program are, I believe, another error on the form. It appears that the start date and the end date of the PhD program is reversed, and that the PhD program started in 2005, potentially, which predated her master's. So the dates are a little bit confusing for me. I dug a little bit deeper into this. Whenever I reviewed, I printed out all of the papers because looking at it online was a little bit of a challenge. So whenever she went through and provided her academic transcript for the Masters of Education administration through the University of Detroit Mercy, it doesn't appear that this meets the requirements of the ABAI verified course sequence. So then when she started her supervision as listed in 2016, I'm not sure if she had started her PhD coursework to be involved in that coursework. Or if there's something else going on, I think at this point I could not see that the requirements to be involved in supervision were met, though she is, to be of record, she is licensed in the state of Michigan. She has been practicing. She has practiced when she received her licensure, her supervision, it appeared that she had those 1500 hours, that those in Michigan followed the rules of licensure for Michigan. Whenever they didn't have to be licensed, they weren't licensed. When they did have to be licensed, they were licensed. So there are pieces that just need some additional clarification, I believe. I just want to find a problem with every application this time. I apologize, but I don't feel like I can make an appropriate recommendation to move this forward until we have the accurate dates of her coursework to know that she could be enrolled in supervision. Comments?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton, I do have a question for you. So essentially what I'm seeing is that she answers yes to question number 19. Did you complete at least 270 classroom hours of specific graduate level instruction? But we don't have transcripts to reflect that.
We have a transcript for her master's degree.
Right. But
it doesn't appear to be the coursework for the for the BACB or the ABAI verified course sequence. I'm going to speak in the appropriate time frame.
So it's not a date issue, it's a documentation issue.
Maybe it's both because the dates are incorrect. They have to be incorrect unless she can go back in time.
Yeah. But to meet that 270 hours, whether she's still in her PhD or not, because it looks like she started her PhD less than a year ago, the PhD would not meet those requirements. So it appears that what staff would need to do then is, one, correct the date. I agree of the expected graduation date for the PhD. But also it appears that we need documentation proving that 270 hours, the full 270. So even if she's counting her PhD work, we would still need to see the full 270.
Thank you for that additional point, Dr. Davis.
And I think we've seen this before, where people just forget to or don't realize the significance of putting their certificate program. So like if they do like the NAU program or the FIT program or, you know, Ball State certificate program, they, because they're thinking, oh, my master's degree, and not thinking about the certificate, we've seen before where they have forgotten to or failed to provide that. But I would agree that we need documentation that those 270 hours were complete.
Do you believe that would explain if she did a certificate? It is what I was wondering as I was going through here, thinking there was something that I just was missing. I did review this one with the utmost brain intensity. So given this, if there are no other comments, I did look this up. I'm going to have you appropriate terminology this time. I would like to move that we have a first additional information request letter sent to the applicant in order to clarify these issues that we have discussed.
Thank you, Beth.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. May I? I just want to confirm what the committee is asking for. I have a correction on the dates for Capella University. The start and end dates appear to be reversed. A transcript, 270 hours of coursework or her AD coursework or certificate does not appear to have been listed on the application or the transcript received. And this is what is needed to show that she qualifies for licensure.
That sounds accurate to me.
Thank you.
All right, and our last applicant, Christina Ellenberg, Dr. Rates.
Yes, thank you. So Ms. Ellenberg received her BCBA in June of 2017. She also indicated she's licensed in Kentucky, received a master's degree in psychology in 2014 from Capella University, and had supervision between August of 15 and October of 16 for a total of 1,575 hours. This was all done in North Carolina under the supervision of Julie Steinman. Looking at the application, I didn't have any concerns.
All right, great, thank you. Okay, so could we have a summary of all this so we can put forth a motion to move these applicants forward?
Isn't that your job? Oh, I'm channeling my inner Denton today because I just want to be funny.
That's not me. Don't do that.
That is so you. You just don't realize it.
Mr. Chair, did you listen to that?
Yes, Ms. Fogg.
All right. For approvals, it is number one, Ms. Duguay. Number two, Ms. Childs. Number four, Christina Alvarez with, yes, recommend approval. Number five, approval is Christopher Morris. Number six, Christina Martinez approval. Number seven, Daria Gwynn. Number eight, Eileen Dale. Number nine, Ms. Glenn. Number 10, Ms. Kennedy. Number 11, Ms. So. Number 12, Ms. Kazarian. Number 14, Nadia Todd. Number 15, Ms. Furlong. Number 17, Ms. Mai, or me, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. Number 19, Ms. Ellenberg. Number 21, Ms. Harrison, although I believe that might have already been done. And then for those that are approved contingent upon a correction, those are Ms. Jones, Ms. Rockford, and then the fair requests are Ms. Selger or Selger. Ms. Waters Trice and Ms. Mazzina was done previously. And that is all.
All right, thank you. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I just want to note for the record that I am recused from 9, Ms. Glenn, 21, Ms. Harrison, and I am abstaining from number 10, Kennedy.
Thank you. And I should note that I've recused from Ms. Harrison as well.
And I'm recused from number 13.
Okay. So it would be best if someone who's not recused could make the motion in the second.
So moved.
And I'll make this.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? And I forgot to ask, is there any discussion prior to the vote? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries. All right. Agenda item number, we have been going now for 2 hours. 2 hours and 15 minutes. Does anybody need a comfort break or can we keep plugging away? Okay, I'm seeing nods, so we'll take a 10-minute break and reconvene at 5 minutes to noon. All right, recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, BACB, Ms. Packenham.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So just a couple of brief updates. We have two more states joining those of us who regulate behavior analysts. I'm sure in the case of Indiana and North Carolina, they'll need to promulgate some rules or regulations in order to actually implement their regulatory program. And then I did include also, or one of the emails included a summary of ASHA's advocacy efforts relative to the distinction of behavior analysis and speech language pathology. That's not something you need me to summarize for you, of course, and maybe typically this would be a case of scope of practice or, dare I say, TERF issues. But given that we've had a lot of conversations around the definition of behavior analysis and what it should and shouldn't include, I thought that that might be something you would want to acknowledge or address in some fashion.
Committee members, would anybody like to address that?
By addressing it, by saying yes, I'd like to address it.
Yeah.
What are our options? Like, we want to be able to make some moves in that direction, right? Like, what's the reality of that? What's the process of that? I mean, we're years out kind of thing.
Mr. Chair, Dr. David, to change the language or lock down your language, I guess, for lack of a better description.
Yeah, just make the adjustments, make the updates, if you will.
So I would have no reticence or concerns about any efforts in the 2022 legislative session to propose some statutory changes. I think that, of course, you would need board approval to move forward with that, but the board in general has, the support from, I think, a very influential member of the legislature. That would be Senator Bartow. She's the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate. So this may be something that, this may be a component of a larger bill with other possible statutory changes. As soon as our bill was filed this session, there were already some discussions about, maybe some other changes that could emerge soon. So I think what we'll need to look at is late summer, early fall, taking stock of all of these discussions and deciding, what might move forward and what we might want to request from a bill sponsor. I also think this is really important for the association to be engaged in this issue too, because this is their practice, this is their scope. So this wouldn't be something that would be, I think, the board or the committee's goal alone, if that makes sense.
Yep, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, I think there needs to be active participation on the parts of the behavior analysts regarding some of these things. And when we're getting groups that are trying to limit our practice, that concerns me. Potentially doing that, I don't know. And I know we're referring to it as turf war, but there's pretty strong evidence that, in regards to language, and I'm talking about not so much form, but rather function. Issues that there's a lit review that I know of, for example, that behavior analysts have far exceeded the majority of the speech journals in research that we've been doing on requesting and labeling items, for example. There's an article by Pennington et al. 2016 that looked at that pretty specifically. And so I would want us to at least be heavily involved in, or at least the association and helping with the language that surrounds that. So.
Agreed.
Okay, let's see. Move on. Any other comments on that item? Okay, let's move on to agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding implementation of HB 2454 to include establishing the out-of-state practice registry. Ms. Backman?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So you've heard me talk about this bill over many months, and the amendments and the evolution of the language that led us to this registry, which due to the emergency clause of this bill, It's the registry requirement is technically in effect right now. And I'm not about to ask Mr. Harris to tell us everything, answer every question or tell us everything that we would like to know about implementing the registry. I know the licensing enforcement section is hard at work on providing the implementing agencies with some answers and some guidance to a whole lot of questions. But what we need to do more immediately is there's a provision of the legislation that exempts for 1 year the rulemaking requirement for the agencies. So that is, in essence, enables the agency to implement some of the requirements of the registry prior to the rulemaking being final. So we do have a proposed rulemaking that we intend to file very soon, just as soon as the board makes its final determinations on what they want in that proposed rulemaking. But there's really two issues that I think this committee can forward to the board with recommendations. The first one would be the fee, and I wrote to that, the fees. I wrote to that in your memorandum where trying to look for some sort of basis or justification upon which to arrive at proposed or recommended fees for anyone who's wanting to register from another state to practice via telehealth into our state. And essentially, because there are no other examples from other states, this is very novel legislation. Really the only basis that I could identify for establishing a fee is, what do we know to be the case for our processes? What do we charge for processing an application? And in my mind, I don't think this registry process is going to be any different than an application for unrestricted licensure. We'll still need to do the intake and the staff administrative review process. We will still have to store this information in a database for which we are, there are costs associated with that. This committee, the board, everyone, at every level of review will exist for this registry, as is the case for applications. So the best recommendation that I can make to you to forward to the board is, let's just set the fees for the initial application to the registry and also the renewal for the registry at the same level as we do an unrestricted license. So that would be my first recommendation set. Does anyone have any questions about how I arrived at those recommendations?
Yeah.
I could almost make the case, because the registry introduces some requirements that are different than that of the unrestricted application for licensure process. We may find that this process is even more involved in some cases than the initial or the unrestricted application process. So we may have to come back at a future date and address that this registry processing may cost us more than what it costs to process an unrestricted licensure application. I just don't want to come at this initially with a higher level of fees than what we're currently charging for an unrestricted license. I think we start with the same fee structure and test that for a year or two.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so then this is my question for Mr. Harris. When I placed this on the agenda, I did not contemplate that there would be another opportunity for this committee to make a recommendation to the board for the exempt rulemaking. The second issue that I hope the agenda allows this committee to address are the application timeframes. So our rule writer needs the needs that to be outlined or declared for purposes of inserting it into the rule language and also into the timeframes table. So can Mr. Harris, do you think we can have that discussion too?
I do. Thank you for asking, Heather. Heidi.
Excellent. So the rationale for that I'm about to offer for the timeframes being entirely consistent with our other application timeframes, I think I think everyone will understand. We don't want to have timeframes for the administrative review process, the substantive review process that diverge from our current timeframes, because in doing so, it's going to be very, very difficult and cumbersome to track. So I think what we want is this, you know, consistent approach to our timeframes so that your future agendas will include everyone who's applying for an unrestricted license and anyone applying also for the registry license. So I don't have any, I don't have any basis upon which to say, you know, the timeframe should be shorter or longer, but I'm recommending that you recommend to the board the same timeframes that are already in rule for this application process. Any questions about that? Okay, so I think we just need a motion then on to forward those recommendations to the board, and then the board will address them with the proposed rulemaking draft in front of them next week.
So do we have a motion?
Can we just so move on the motion?
Okay, second?
I'll second.
All right, and any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, opposed? All right, motion carries. All right, next item, agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed legislation, but not limited to the General Appropriations Act for the state of fiscal year 2020. Ms. Packenhorn.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So this was on the agenda for purposes of providing an update relative to the General Appropriations Act and whether it included the appropriated approval of our additional halftime FTE, but we received this news earlier, last week, I believe it was, at any rate, earlier this week, I can't recall. So the news has been shared, the good news has been shared, and so we are more than excited to move forward with augmenting our team to provide a better level of service to all of our stakeholders, most notably our applicants. My vision, I think, for this has been articulated in the past. I see this additional resource as specifically assigned to this committee and supporting the work of this committee. I think that it's an extraordinary challenge for one licensing specialist to try to work in both worlds, in both psychology applications and also behavior analyst applications. So all along, it's made sense to me to sort of, you know, divide those roles, although I really would see these two individuals as being cross-trained to support one another in anyone's absence. So this is an opportunity for the committee to give me any, you know, thoughts or reactions or input or insights and to, you know, help me celebrate this achievement, because this is, I think, this is overdue, but it's going to make a significant impact to address the pain points that we discuss every meeting.
Celebration for sure, right? I mean, it's a huge step forward to be able to have that kind of firepower now to help all of, you know, your entire staff. So it's great. Like, it was exciting to hear the other day. So I'm happy for you, happy for the request went through.
I like the idea of the cross-training, as you mentioned. I think that would be even strengthen the department even further. So, yeah.
Indeed. And, you know, I won't suggest that, you know, Kathy will never again be, you know, a resource for this committee yet, but I think that we'll probably, I'm looking for someone who's going to be, who's going to grow into this role, who can provide the level of, you know, support and, you know, speak to the content of applications and requirements as competently as Kathy does. So
Well, I think most of the committee would agree that it would be not good to have Kathy around as much as it is, so, yeah.
Very good. Well, that is all I had. Of course, I'll keep you updated as we move forward. Jennifer and I have been, you know, some brainstorming and some strategizing for how to have this resource in place as soon as is humanly possible. So what will be exciting, I think, too, for this resource will be able to essentially learn the responsibilities concurrent with our implementation of our new system. So this person will probably not have to struggle through, you know, our paper-based application process to any extent. So that's very positive.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Okay, agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding practice monitor development plan. Ms. Michelson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of having this item on today's agenda is simply to provide the committee with an update regarding the progress that Heidi and I have made to develop the list. The committee may recall at the last meeting that they had made a motion to move forward with a plan to develop a list of practice monitors for our behavior analyst licensees who are required to have supervision with regard to a consent agreement or board order, and that the development of this list would primarily occur through a partnership with AZABA leadership. And so at this point, Heidi and I are working towards doing a presentation for AZABA, and they can invite any interested individuals. And this presentation would include an overview of the practice monitor role, the responsibilities of the monitor, and relevant statutes. So I am happy to report that after coordination with Ms. Bellacos and Ms. Elsie, who I believe is here today, that we have determined a date for the presentation. It will take place by Zoom on Wednesday, June 16th from 8 to 9. Heidi and I are working on a PowerPoint presentation to go along with this. And I have also reached out to one of our esteemed licensed psychologists, Dr. Michael Redivo. He has served as a practice monitor for many of our psychologists over the years. And I inquired if he would be willing to participate on June 16th and provide some helpful input and information, to which he agreed. So I'm definitely looking forward to having him be present. It was also our intention to have one of the CBA members available on June 16th if they would be able to provide just very brief input from a regulator's perspective. Dr. Stenhoff and Ms. Denton did let me know that they were not available on the state. So we're hopeful that one of our other CBA members would perhaps volunteer to attend. I don't know if I have any volunteers, Dr. Davey or Dr. Ray.
Is the time again?
June 16th from 8 to 9 a.m. via Zoom.
I don't know why I'm looking. I don't do anything. I should be good. I can attend if Dr. Davey or Dr. Rates are unable to. I do, however, want to also clarify, just in case, because we've had this happen before, where when Heidi presented, there were multiple of us on a call anyway. So even if Dr. Davey or Dr. Rates are able to take it, I would like to attend. And if that is the case, we may want to consider a notice to the public.
Dr. Davey, Dr. Rates, do you anticipate being able to attend?
I'm available to attend. I don't do anything that early in the morning anyways.
I would like to attend, but I will be driving and not looking at the screen and just observing and listening to the public and the response and partaking, but I will not be available to present.
Okay.
And I will be in that same boat. I would like to attend, but I won't be able to present because I will also be commuting to another appointment.
I'm not volunteering to present. I'm volunteering to listen. So any part of presenting. So I don't know what part I missed there. But
the volunteer was for a presentation.
No, that's totally going to be Dr. Nicholas Wilson. That sounds like a great idea. I so move that. And then I'll second it and approve it. So that's good.
And we've moved on.
Yeah. And then, but I do think it's a wise idea maybe to notice the public so that we could listen. Like, I think that would
be the best. We'll put a notice on our website since multiple members will be attending. And Dr. Davis Wilson, we do appreciate you volunteering to present. We'll go over in more detail with regard to what that would look like, but it would be very brief, I promise. So that concludes my summary. Let me know if there are any questions, but I think this is the last agenda item.
Thank you. All right. Item 13, new agenda items for future meetings.
Mr. Chair, maybe I spoke to this and I don't even remember, but did we do number 10?
Let's see here.
I don't remember that either, but I thought.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Sorry, I lied.
So here we go. Agenda item number 10. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding application efficiencies work group, Ms. Packanon.
And this will be brief. We did, by we, I mean Ms. Michelson and me, we discussed this effort with Ms. Galvin, and for purposes of evaluating whether this needed to be, this was an official committee that would require, you know, notice to the public and so forth. And her recommendation was, you know, frame it as not a committee or a work group, frame it as a project, which indeed it is. So we won't be providing any sort of a public notice of what we're working on. But that being said, we do have the two individuals that I identified in your memorandum who have agreed to have committed to what they offered to do some weeks ago, which is help us develop some job aids and maybe some other recommendations relative to the application process in order to reduce the kinds of errors that you see with every batch of applications. As you saw in Caitlin Doherty's research, there were an astonishing number of opportunities of potential for application errors. And so, you know, we really need those to, we need that list to shrink or be eliminated entirely. And we know that when we implement our new system that many or hopefully all of those opportunities to make errors will be minimized or maybe ameliorated entirely because the system won't allow for mistakes to be made in the way that they can be done on a fillable PDF form. So that being said, I do think that first I would like a member of this committee to participate on the project because I think that having the perspective of an application reviewer would be very useful. Staff, of course, will be, you know, supporting the project, but I really do think that a member of this committee would add a lot of value to the discussions. So that's my first request.
I think, did we talk about this before, Heidi, that you were going to, like, because I'd gone, like, wasn't I one of the most recent ones to go through the renewal application?
Oh, this would be for the initial application.
Oh, the initial, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I offered to volunteer to help on the renewal because I wasn't frustrated by it.
I'm happy to help wherever needed.
Since you're retired.
Well, it's summer, so I don't have any of my, like, faculty meetings or any of that going. I do have emails that I've got to get out to people, but other than that...
And I do move again, Diane Davis Wilson, to be the board's lackey for the summer. You can have another intern. Here's your intern. You didn't even know it, but Diane is going to be your intern.
Oh, no, we're not having any interns over the summer. I don't think you heard Heidi's summary earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, I heard that somehow the deputy director was pulling that of the executive director. I'm very interested in that dynamic of how that came about. That'll be when we're not recording.
No comment. Thank you.
Well, very, very good. I'm glad to have someone with the degree of insight that Dr. Davis-Wilson has participating in this project. That being said, I really don't think this is going to take a whole lot of time or a series of meetings to accomplish. We're going to be using the PDF applications for such a brief period of time. The target date to launch the new system is August 15th. So, you know, we'll obviously have, it will be sort of a phased in kind of situation where we still have applications coming before you that are paper-based while others are coming through the system. So, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, sort of straddle those two worlds for a little while. But I really think that a lot of the solutions that we will be developing won't even need to be used for a long time. One thing that I'm going to ask this group to do as part of this project is I want to survey the applicants from the recent past. I haven't made up my mind, you know, how far back in time we want to go, but we need some baseline data in terms of, you know, how those applicants found the application process. And I'm not a good survey writer, so this is why I'm going to lean on this group extensively. But I really want to know, you know, how was the process? You know, what went well, what didn't go well? Because when we implement the new system, I want to be able to measure that again at some point in the future. So I think that the individuals who have volunteered to help us, they may find they're going to be tasked with more than what they agreed to do, but hopefully they'll be willing. Any thoughts or any other input on what we can ask this group to do for us? Okay, great. Thank you.
Apparently it's towards a meeting where you should just ask us for things and we're just going to approve them.
I have a list.
All right. Well, assuming I didn't miss anything else, agenda item number 13, new agenda items for future meetings.
I know we talked about this before, and I wanted to just bring it up again because we had a recent situation that happened in the community, and I won't divulge details, but are we still thinking about ways to help the association promote the RAMP program? I know we talked about, like, maybe it needs to just go back on an agenda of, like, how are we disseminating out the information about it? And perhaps supporting the association on some education about it. I'll leave it at that, but it's been heavy on my mind lately, because of some recent circumstances. And I think that it would be beneficial to maybe revisit how we can get that information out to licensees.
Certainly, I'll put that on the next agenda.
All right. Any other items? Okay, hearing none. Agenda item number 14, adjournment. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, second.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your weekend.